This is Scott Burnham of the University of Montana School of Law, and I want to share with you some tips on answering multiple choice questions. Now, the answer to any legal question is a function of both the facts and the rules. And in order to properly analyze the question, you need to appreciate the facts, knowing which ones are important, and you need to be able to apply the correct rule in the particular factual situation. Many professors use multiple choice, not just because they are easy to grade, but because multiple choice tests can test your skills of legal analysis. Now, in the vocabulary of multiple choice, a question consists of a fact pattern called the stimulus, or stem, that ends with a question. Following the question is a series of options or responses. The correct option, the answer, is called the key, and the incorrect ones are called the distractors. First tip, as with any exam, follow instructions. If your score is simply the sum of the right answers, there's no penalty for guessing wrong, then don't leave any blanks. If there's only one key, then don't choose two options. As with any exam, pay attention to the call of the question, which means answer the question that's asked. For example, suppose the question asks, which of the following is not a category of collateral under Article 9? And then there's a list of various collateral. Here, the question asks you to do the opposite of what you normally do. It asks that you choose the wrong option rather than the right option. If you miss a little word like not when you read the call of the question, you're likely to go astray. Now, another tip is to understand which category of multiple choice questions the question belongs to. For example, some multiple choice questions simply ask you to recall information. For example, which of the following is a definition of restitution, followed by various definitions? These questions require that you know the rule, and little analytical reasoning is involved. These questions may reward those who have learned the rules. Alternatively, your instructor may give an exam that's open book, perhaps limiting the allowed material to the relevant statutes. In that case, you can verify the answer by finding the relevant statute. The question then rewards those who are familiar with the statutes, knowing where to find things so they're not doing original research. Another category of questions is those that draw on materials used in class, asking you to recall what you read or discussed. For example, which of the following is the holding in the case of Masterson v. Sine, followed by a series of statements. These questions reward students who have read the material and paid attention in class. If you don't know the answer, there's no logical way to figure it out. And even with an open book exam, there may not be time to find the answer. But most multiple choice questions require analysis. And that's the category we're going to focus on, the type of question that requires analysis. And your approach to these questions should employ the traditional approach used on essay examinations, known by the acronym IRAC, Issue, Rule, Analysis or Application, Conclusion. On an essay exam, you're given the facts. You then deduce the issue that is raised by these facts. You then recall the appropriate rule that applies to the issue. Then you analyze or apply the facts to the rule to come to a conclusion. Well, a multiple choice question similarly begins with facts in the stem from which you must determine the issue. This task can be easier with multiple choice questions because the facts for an essay can be complex, raising many issues, while a multiple choice question is usually narrow, raising only a single issue. To spot the issue, it is helpful to know the table of contents of the course material, which becomes a checklist for the topical areas in which issues may arise. The first tip is that the facts will suggest the relevant issue. Ask yourself why the author included certain facts in the stem. They were probably included to raise a certain issue. For example, a question begins with these facts. A buyer made a telephone call to a widget seller. The buyer agreed to buy 100 widgets for $1,000. Now, while you won't know if it's relevant until you've read the entire stem and the question, a light should go on when you read the fact that the buyer made a telephone call to the seller. Why did the drafter of the question include that particular fact instead of just stating that the parties made an agreement? A good working hypothesis is that it is significant that this transaction was oral, suggesting that the issue might involve the enforceability of an oral agreement. Look for words or phrases that trigger particular issues. Once you have determined what the issue is, you will need to employ the relevant rule. Then you will apply the facts to the rule and come to a conclusion. On an essay exam, you would write all of this out. But on a multiple choice exam, it's a matter of selecting the option that correctly states the conclusion. Sometimes the options contain just a conclusion, but other times they contain both a conclusion and analysis, such as the reason for the conclusion. For example, if you are given facts and asked whether a contract is enforceable, the options might read A, yes, because of reason A, B, yes, because of reason B, C, no, because of reason C, D, no, because of reason D. Your analysis should have led you to the conclusion, so you should be able to pick the reason that led to your conclusion. You'll often be able to eliminate two options as erroneous or irrelevant and narrow the field to two options that both seem correct. In distinguishing among the options, you might employ some of the following techniques. 1. Review the facts to determine whether you are being tested on a factual distinction. In contracts, for example, one response might be correct when both parties are businesses, another when one party is a consumer. Or one response might be correct when the contract is written, another when it is oral. 2. Make sure you're applying the right rule. Rule A might lead you to one response, while rule B might lead you to another. 3. Check on whether you're being tested on the exception to a rule. The rule might lead you to one response, while the exception might lead you to another. Finally, remember that you're trying to choose the best option when more than one might seem correct. Now let's see if we can apply some of these techniques. Let's look at a couple of sample questions from contracts. First, a homeowner made a telephone call to a contractor. The contractor agreed to build a new porch for the homeowner for $1,000. When the contractor showed up, the homeowner terminated the contract, claiming it was not enforceable. Is the contract enforceable? As you read the stem, you note the important facts that this is an oral contract, and this is for construction services. You then come up with the relevant rule. You know that contracts within the statute of frauds are not enforceable if oral. You run down your checklist of contracts that are within the statute of frauds, and you find that construction contracts that can be completed within a year are not within the statute of frauds. Therefore, this is an enforceable contract, even though oral. So now let's look at our possible choices. The question is the contract enforceable? The choices are A, yes, because the general rule is that oral contracts are enforceable. B, yes, because between merchants, an oral contract is enforceable if a confirmation is sent and not objected to. C, no, because it was a contract for the sale of goods for $500 or more. D, no, because it is a contract for the sale of real property. Now, the only one of those options that fits is A. We can rule out D because it's not a contract for the sale of real property. We can eliminate C because it's not a contract for the sale of goods. We can eliminate B because that exception is only applicable to the sale of goods. So that leaves us with A, the general rule that oral contracts are enforceable. Now let's try a variation on those facts. Let's assume this is the question. A buyer made a telephone call to a seller. The buyer agreed to buy 100 widgets for $1,000. When the seller tendered the widgets, the buyer refused to purchase them, claiming the contract was unenforceable. Is the contract enforceable? Well, you might start this analysis from scratch, or you might look for differences between this and the previous question. The facts are pretty much the same, except we have the sale of widgets rather than the construction of a porch. What is the difference? Well, widgets are goods, so the UCC applies. is the, under the facts, is the contract within the statute of frauds? Well, yes, we know the UCC statute of frauds rule is that contracts for the sale of goods for $500 or more must be evidenced by a writing. This one was not evidenced by a writing, therefore it's not enforceable. So we go back to our options, and we can eliminate D, it's a contract for the sale of real property. We can eliminate A, the general rule that oral contracts are enforceable, and we're left with B and C. B, between merchants, an oral contract is enforceable if a confirmation is sent and not objected to. And C, it's a contract for the sale of goods for $500 or more. So both might apply, but there are no facts suggesting that there was a confirmation. Therefore, we would eliminate option B as irrelevant, and the key is C, no, because it's a contract for sale of goods for $500 or more. So I hope that these steps will help you in your analysis of multiple choice questions.